Good evening, everyone. We've got plenty of room in the studio to socially distance tonight, as some of the crew have inexplicably had better offers for the evening. But not to worry, as we still have sufficient stalwarts and staunch supporters to put out our usual quality of output. We've got all the top performers tonight, namely Harry Balzac.
You do know it's not just cream that floats to the top, don't you?
Yeah. Wilma Fingerdew.
I like being on top.
The apology officer.
Oh, make fun of my height, why don't you? You know, I hardly ever get on top of anything. I even needed to borrow a wee ladder to get on top of this matchbox.
We have Norma Snockers, who doesn't have her loo.
You make me sound as bad as Cow in his bathroom with the open plan ceiling.
Well, okay. Well, look, it has been a couple of weeks, so let me just sort of dig around a tiny bit and find the right buttons. Now, how does this work again? What's the first thing we have to do? Oh, yes, it's this.
Everest mounted. As penguins get dog's breath.
Engineers get a new advisor.
Hotbox can't come out to play. Yes.
Per lots of ardour, ad astra.
What are you doing? I said kismet, Hardy.
Atrus 5060 tells us where to stick it to the Thargoids.
Blah, blah, BGS stuff. You're not even listening, are you?
Community continuity opportunity.
And finally,
first tonight, tales of intrepid exploration, fuel ratting, and science above and beyond the call of duty. During the hot mess mission last year, Hutton Trucker Commander Dogsbreath, apparently that condition has to do with the diet provided by his ship's cook, took it upon himself to ensure that a number of ice worlds were well and truly mugged and safe from mods. With the good ship Aurora Australis having been retired after successful completion of the mission, and turned, quite literally, into a big pile of very fancy handmade pens, and the new exploration vessel not yet completed, Commander Dogsbreath commandeered the MPV Everest with a vital mission in mind. Yes, the stations were once again running low on fuel and supplies, and the scientific expedition team were in danger of going snowblind after a full season on the ice world. Loading up the Everest, Dogsbreath was joined by a team of fuel rats and supplies from Canon Interstellar. The manifest has included a lifetime supply of Gnosis avian cheese, claimed by some to be the ultimate in survival food, much like the legendary dwarf bread described by 20th and 21st century philosopher and satirist Terence Pratchett. And I quote, "The dwarf bread was brought out for inspection, but it was miraculous, the dwarf bread. No one ever went hungry when they had some dwarf bread to avoid. You only had to look at it for a moment and instantly you could think of dozens of things you'd rather eat. Your boots, for example. Mountains. Raw sheep. Your own foot. If nothing else, it can double up as ammunition for the ship's defensive cannons and even at a push be used as a door wedge to stop them banging during violent solar storms. The MPV Everest is a specially adapted fleet carrier. Smaller in size than the ones from the Brewer Corporation, MPV standing for Multi-Purpose Vehicle. It sports only a single medium-sized pad at the bow, but has a hull capable of withstanding close passes on black holes and even the odd accidental high-G impact with an ice planet. The crew have been taken through familiarization and training whilst on the first few days of their voyage, under the watchful eye of Commander Dogsbreath, including a nice trip to the engine room, finding their space legs, and of course, watching out for passing asteroids. The fuel rat team, not needed until arrival at Casey, their destination, have been placed on watch, with the first one to successfully work out how to use the pulse wave analyzer whilst travelling in a forward direction and correctly identify a growler, winning a prize that may or may not include being allowed to not have Gnosis cock cheese gratin for dinner.
As reported towards the end of last year, pilots have been hard at work convincing the engineers over in Colonia that their catalogues of available upgrades were rubbish and cheap knockoffs of the ones available in the bubble. With Operation Montgomery Scott having completed in 3306, Operation LaForge set out to bring engineering quality up to CBC standards, that's Certificate of Bubble Conformity. This rubber stamp certifies that their work is of a high enough grade to be viewed as reliable, robust, and ready for action in the same way as that of their civilized cousins over in Humanity's Home. With a shortage of commanders in the area, at least half of them being a Hanky clone, this has been a long and tiring mission, with the engineers required to perform the same upgrades over and over again in search of perfection. As with winning a Michelin star back in the 21st century, each upgrade needs to be able to match each other upgrade perfectly and be delivered time and again to the very highest standard. At the start of the campaign in November 3306, bespeckled human moleman Etienne Dorn was slacking on his warrant and manifest scanners. Swiftly bodged upgrades meant he had a hard time telling a galaxy from a bounty, or indeed even a Milky Way from your butterfingers. Marcia Hicks was having trouble with her limpets, and Petra Olmanova had her AFMU mixed up with her torpedo pylons, and her ECM muddled with the mine launcher, leading to some rather hilarious consequences mid-combat, after a hull seal attempted to repair a stricken ship with a torpedo, before realizing, firing the ECM and promptly carpet-bombing a nearby moon. Over 200,000 tries later, and we can confirm that all three are now fully certified in the missing blueprints, and Colonia is marginally less of a backwater and a little bit more of a respectable holiday home for retired truckers. Our thanks to Commander Paul Smith III. Not sure if that's third generation or his clone designation. Commander Yanni V, Ian Doncaster, and everyone who helped. By the way, this Thursday, Colonia Bingo has been moved to Friday to make way for the installation of industrial sanders for your corns.
Team Hotbox, along with Thumb Warriors throughout the galaxy, have turned those thumbs to the down position this week as the Pilots Federation revealed that the long-awaited SpaceLegs license and the new location landings had been struck by an unforeseen engineering challenge. It appears that the shipboard systems used by Hotbox and friends need just a little bit of extra work before they can let loose on tenuous atmospheres. Rumours that whilst the majority of the galaxy operate in federal metric, Hotbox ships were built on the old Imperial system, meaning that the 3/8 inch thickness hull plating won't fit the 10mm atmospheric coating, and their oxygen tanks can't squeeze a litre into their quarter-sized life support. In the case of a number of Hutton pilots, there are rumours that the one-size-fits-all spacesuit actually doesn't, and a number of truckers of both smaller and larger stature would end up looking like they were walking around wearing their mum's high heels or an overstuffed sausage. Or a huge overreaction to the reply to the question, "Does my bum look big in this flight suit?" There are rumours that should anyone actually find a member of Team PS4, they're suffering similar delays, though those are down to someone losing the login key to their software systems. Understandably, everywhere except Hutton, there has been a little consternation over the delays. But in a masterstroke of positive news, the Pilots Federation finally revealed that simulated testing of space legs and landings will be taking place in only a few months' time, and engineers had been dispatched to various starports to install the latest in technology in time for the thorough testing required to gain certification. The Pilots Federation have been at pains to point out that despite popular rumour that everything would be already discovered by the time Hotbox are allowed to play, in a galaxy with over 400 billion star systems, even Commander Chix is unlikely to manage more than an atom in an orange worth of discoveries.
Recently, Commander Ad Astra, one of Operation IDA's, or is that IDA's, infantry, has decided to take a short vacation by vacating the bubble and heading out to Colonia in order to try to gain his elite rank for exploration. As luck would have it, he was about 70% of the way to Hanky's realm when Tharg the Mighty chose that time to rise from his slumbers and attack. Searching around for a friendly fleet carrier to speed up his return lest he arrive too late, the commander found himself bereft of a space taxi as most of the Hutton fleet carriers were either back in the bubble or already in Colonia due to remain for some time thanks to the ongoing community goal. Pausing only to remove his underpants and replace them over his flight suit, inside out of course, in order that they should last another week, Commander Montgomery Python as usual was up for a mission, but this time not for the glory, the points and the credits, but solely because, despite appearances, he is, deep down, a decent human being. To cut a 43-hour story short, Commander Ad Astra was rescued and returned to the bubble to save people from burning stations in the Witchhead Nebula, and Montgomery Python returned home to buff out the scratches from his 27,000 light-year trip, and to spend time counting the 76 million credits he earned from exploration along the way. Perhaps this kind of thing will catch on, and a guild of fleet carrier owners will spring up, dedicated to bringing pilots home, not because they're stranded after running out of fuel, not because their hull's about to disintegrate, not even because they've blindly jumped into a gravity well they can't get out of, but purely because they're a bit impatient. What would they call themselves? They do a lot of jumping, so you don't have to. So maybe the fretfulness flees?
What is it about record breakers? You wait for nearly a whole year and two turn up at once. After Vantian dropped his glove, threw down the gauntlet, a veritable flurry of pilots attempting to beat Commander Brett Riverboat's long-held record for the Hutton run was seen, at first, mostly it has to be said, by Commander Hardy. Over and over he dashed himself against the vast gulf of space on the way to Hutton, each time so close, so close. But as a certain handbag designer told a certain incumbent, no cigar. Eventually, Hardy came within 1 second of Riverboat's record, only to see the winning tape cruelly broken and the winner's medal snatched once more out of reach by Commander Overlight using an approach with his ship's blues and twos to knock a whole 5 seconds off the record. For most of us, that would be that. We'd be saying, didn't want the stupid record anyway, I was only doing it for the mugs, and kicking the wall before disappearing into the bar to see what dreg Cecil had left for us. But not so Commander Hardy. He's made of sterner stuff. Climbing back into the saddle, then getting off and climbing into his pilot seat, he tried again, and again, and again, and again, until finally he broke the record. Unfortunately, not the new record, the old one. We congratulate Commander Overlight for a magnificent achievement, one that will go down the annals of history, but we feel that the real truckery hero of this story is Commander Hardy, who didn't give up. Just like that most Huttony of Hutton heroes, was too blinded by the light seconds to know when he was beaten, and carried on until he achieved his goal. It's this kind of spirit that embodies a group of people that think nothing of making the trip to Alpha Centauri, to the galaxy's most famous and most distant orbital, over and over again. A group of magnificent titans that really do show the whole galaxy that we really do not have anything better to do, in every sense. And so, we would like to extend the mug of friendship to Commander Hardy, You fulfilled the spirit of the challenge, you kept us entertained, and you really have earned yourself a Hutton mug. Besides, Overlighty already has one, so it's going spare. Please contact itookpart@huttonorbital.com and we'll make it happen. Did that tale of dogged adventure, see what I did there? Because our leader's a dog, it's a pun. Suit yourself. Inspire you? Do you think, how hard can it be? I'm sure you can do it in 45 minutes if you don't select a destination or always look out of the right-hand window or something like that. Would you make the attempt if it wasn't so lonely? You're in luck. Commander Bam has organised a mass hunting run for the 23rd to the 24th of January, and Norma will be giving us details shortly.
Good evening, trackers. Is this thing live? Atrus 5060 reporting in with the latest update of the Thargoid incursion, now that we're solely blaming it all on Montgomery Python. While last week you were recognising the best among you with the Muggies, the Wedgehead Nebula and Coalsack Nebula were under heavy attack. These latest incursions have resulted in some of the largest numbers of Thargoids we've ever seen. The anti-Xeno community have made a heavy decision to focus on only one nebula at a time, prioritising the recently settled Coalsack Nebula first. Through many engagements, the AXI, or is it AXI, and its allies have cleared out Muscadart region PJ-PV6-1. I do like my PJs, you know. Coalsack sector VUO-B66 and Coalsack sector KNS-B49, and then quickly moved onto the Witchhead Nebula, where the combat zones are still active in, oh my goodness, there's a list, Haki, Lembas, Wellington and Onorose. The Thargoid presence there has been reduced to marginal, and we expect to be rid of the bugs within the next few days. Quick to respond, Operation IDA, or is it IDA, has begun repair operations out in the Coalsack Nebula. Needless to say, they are some of the galaxy's most trucking truckers and always welcome help. Fleet carriers full of repair supplies have been flown out, and more supplies will be needed soon to get the stations back online in the Witchhead Nebula. Speaking of Operation IDA, or maybe Anti-IDA, or Anti-IDA, Montgomery Python may have redeemed himself for causing the Thargoid invasion without rescue of Commander Ad Astra. For this I salute you, sir. Also, Monty, please don't blow up any more Thargoids. We seriously can't afford another incursion like this one. As for the rest of you trackers, get out there and show these aliens what we're made of. Good luck out there. For the mug.
I've got a note here from Deadmeat. It says, gone to Narnia, taken warm coat, big battle, back soon. That's it. There's nothing else. Right, I'd better have a look. Yes, we're in war to take over a system, and yes, it started a few hours ago. It's in the Narensis system, and we want to win this one. We've been after the system for ages, apparently, and we're not giving up now. So, everyone who can shoot straight, or even if you can't, make your way to Narensis and fight for the mug. Let's look at the other numbers. They're up and down more than Alvin when he's busting to be let out for a pee. Barnard Star, Epsilon Eridani, and Wolf 1481 need a bit of a tickle. We're in expansion again. Shh, don't tell Alvin. But don't worry too much about it. So, go to Barnard Star, get your eyes tested, and clear up after the Muggies after party for a bit, if you don't fancy the combat. If anyone's got a little data left that they didn't put into the going for gold, then now's the time. Drop it in those three. Over in Hanky's Colon, both Doritos and Il Procol need a bit of help. In fact, Tyr and Pythias, we need a bit of help too, so they do stuff there too. And that's it. Let's hope he doesn't come a cropper in the war zone. I'm not doing this again.
We've been off the air for a little while and the excesses of Christmas have caught up with most people. But that's not stopped everyone, and there are still events in the galaxy being organised by you, the Elite Dangerous community. If you were hoping to take part in Expedition Mercury's Wings, then quite frankly, why did you leave it so late? They've been going since November the 22nd, for goodness sake. Check out bit.ly/Mercury's Wings, and you can see that the last waypoint on Sunday the 17th at 1900 UTC will be around Lu Chuya and then QD618 Body 4. Once everyone's arrived, there will be a farewell address and mass jump to the after party on a planet in a nearby system, where there's going to be much silliness, including small ship banger racing, the making of ship towers, and whatever frankly crackers things our space madness afflicted minds can come up with. We're not sure what that covers, but Commander Yannick, and thanks Commander for keeping us entertained with news of your passage, has advised that anyone attending the party should come in the opposite of fancy dress. Bring a small, cheap, and above all, expendable ship, or buy one on board. There are haulers and others for sale. Leave your keys with the organisers, and Carrier's Shepherd's Dream and Magic Space Bus will be in orbit, so you have somewhere for you to park your unusual ship, meaning that you'll have a place to sleep it off afterwards. It's not too late to take part in Sidewinder Fuel Finder, organised by the Bucky Ball Racing Club. It started on the 9th of January, but it's continuing until the 17th. This is about who can complete the course fastest, using a basic Sidewinder and a stock 2A FSD. You start by going to the Maya region and buying a 2A FSD for your current ship. Make your way to Artemis Lodge in Salenio, store the 2A FSD, buy a Sidewinder, and add the stored frameshift. You can strip out any unwanted modules, but you can't add anything. Then the race begins. Make your way to Nigalia and refit the Sidewinder however you want. No guiding tech, stored modules or engineering allowed. Fuel scope is allowed, even recommended from this point. Charge your FSD and get to Wollum Vision in Fuelum and hope you have the shortest time. Full details are in the forums, in the Hutton Facebook group events page, and we've made a link for you, bit.ly Sidewinder Fuel Finder. Titan Contractors have organised their third trip, named Trip Cygna. As usual, their event is designed to help new pilots, or in any case pilots who are inexperienced at exploration. It's a short 2-week expedition, which will allow you to see such sights as Betelgeuse, Jackson's Lighthouse, Mitter and Hollow, and a load more besides. Make your way to the fleet carrier TOC Tiger in the K37L7Z system before 15th of January at 1900 UTC, and they'll whisk you away. They're expecting to return on the 29th of January at the same time. Details are once more in the forums, and the easy link for this one is bit.ly Trip Sigma. But don't delay, that departure time is less than 24 hours away. Unless you're listening to the podcast, in which case, better luck next time. Last, but of course not least, as mentioned earlier, if you've ever wanted to travel to Hutton with friends, Commander Bam has organised a mass Hutton run from 2000 UTC on January 23rd to 800 UTC on January 24th. That's a duration of 12 hours for those who ran out of fingers trying to do the calculation. And he says something about trying to beat off Overlight. Details in the events section of our Facebook page, and don't forget to use the Hutton Helper. And those are the community-led events that we know about. As always, if you're creating an event or you know of one coming up, please let us know so we can give a shout out in the news.
Jupiter Rochester. Some say he's creating a private fiefdom rather than running a major corporation, and are worried about his real intentions. According to one anonymous source broadcast on Vox Galactica, the recent acquisition of Lacon Spaceways by Core Dynamics was a personal project of Mr. Rochester under the umbrella of Jupiter Division, which appears to be a possible precursor to something sinister, with his many contacts with the military. We'll be following this story with interest, and we will continue in our search for an actual picture of the big man himself, if for no other reason than to confirm or disprove the rumour that Jupiter is just a nickname, associated with him solely because he's a gas giant with a big red spot.
Thanks to the Galactic Celebration of the Muggies, we were unable to cover last week's news about the start of campaigning for the election of Prime Minister of the Alliance, which will take place on 25th February this year. The Alliance is not known for long-term stability, and current incumbent Edward Mahon is fighting an uphill battle to become the first Prime Minister to serve two terms, being harried by Councillor Nakato Kane of Tian Isla, who has been outspoken about the causes of the recent Thargoid attacks, but we do not expect anything sneaky, underhand or accidental to happen to her. Oh no, not at all.
Talking of the Alliance, Hutton congratulates Utopia for winning the bid to host the upcoming Galactic Summit to feature representatives from the Empire, Federation and Alliance. We would like to disassociate ourselves from any suggestions that may imply that it was due to the passing of any brown envelopes or the advertising campaign put out by Utopia with the tagline, "A Hutton carrier is a slicker, but Utopia is quicker," which may have deterred attendees who dislike the really, really boring view on board a fleet carrier.
There are rumours that the next community go will involve shipping bricks to Colonia to make the galaxy's largest fireplace, in order to have a mantelpiece wide enough to store all of King Hanky's elite trophies, gained by him and his clones. This week saw the clone army's 17th elite, and one more will make 18. Which is A, a lucky number in Chinese tradition, B, the original catch number in Joseph Heller's novel. It was changed to catch 22 to avoid confusion with another current novel. And C, the acreage of pizza that Americans consumed every day back in the 21st century, even when they could go outside.
Hutton's own Dr. Madeling is looking to set up a veritable Hutton on Tour, a sort of a vote-your-own exploration adventure with a carrier. Would anyone be interested in coming exploring on a fleet carrier? You can bring a bunch of different ships, though I'd recommend a long-range exploration ship, an all-rounder, and some form of mining ship, he says. We would pick a location not too far away to start and head out there. Once there, we would station for roughly a week while we take votes on where to go next, he finished. If you are interested, go to the Hutton Facebook page and search for Mark Ward's post.
Everyone's favourite snapper-up of unconsidered trifles, that is, if you consider a bottle of gin to be a trifle, Cecil B. Trumpington, has finally done some good. Thanks to an ingenious marketing campaign that managed to gloss over all of the many disadvantages, the Holo-Me duplication machine has been running continuously, and more pilots than ever before are waking up to Cecil's voice in their ear when flying. Yes, pilots have handed over perfectly good credits solely in order to get frustrated with the old goat, or maybe to learn a few new cocktail recipes, or even to be reminded of jokes that really should have stayed unscraped right at the bottom of the barrel. Cecil is, as you'd expect, hopeless with money, so he and the corporation responsible for the production of the Holo-Me always hand over every last credit collected and pass it on to special effect. The most recent credits transfer was over 70 billion credits, which, we calculate, was exactly £1,000 in the early 21st century.
I'm never quite sure whether Leo's looking at me funny.
Sorry, dude.
Did someone see a dog?
Get in your basket.
I'm a dog person.
Dave thinks you're a knob.